Throughout the Americas, the U.S. government and international lenders are implementing a vast new policy designed to turn the hemisphere into one big common market. The plan first calls for the North American Free Trade Agreement. Then, all of North and South America would be linked under the so-called Enterprise for the Americas. Under this strategy, member countries would privatize national industries, implement austerity programs, and convert their economies to produce exports for the United States. In many nations, this new export policy is already in place. Today, we'll look at two examples, including flour exports from Colombia. First, we travel to Honduras, where U.S. and World Bank loans have helped build prosperous shrimp farms along the country's southern coast. But some critics warn of serious environmental and social costs. Producers Sandy Tolan and Nancy Postero prepared this report.
A huge steel basket swings from the claw of a John Deere crane. It hovers above a big metal bin. Suddenly, the basket opens, and down come tens of thousands of blue-gray shrimp. They slither along the hard metal surface. Within seconds, dozens of young Honduran men, their shovels flashing in the hot sun, have covered the shrimp with ice. Within a week, these shrimp will be in restaurants and bars on the east coast of the United States. It's harvest time at Granjas Marinas, the largest shrimp farm in the hemisphere. Each year, several million pounds, nearly one shrimp for every person in the United States, are raised in long, uniform ponds, frozen in the nearby packing plant, and shipped north to the port of Savannah, Georgia. Carlos Lara, director of this shrimp farm, drives his mud-spattered truck past the rows and rows of ponds across his vast salt flats near the Gulf of Fonseca.
Aquí en Granja Marina, 1,850 hectáreas. En producción.
Right now we have about 4,500 acres of ponds in production. Eventually we'll have nearly 8,000 acres of ponds.
2,800 hectáreas.
Lara, a Honduran businessman, has spent the last 10 years helping to build a shrimp industry. He and other shrimp farmers were granted concessions from the Honduran government to develop the farms on what once were public lands, the hard mud beaches at the edge of the Gulf. Here, amidst the dense mangrove forests, winding estuaries rise and fall with the tides and feed the ponds with the salt water necessary to raise the shrimp. Today, with money from the U.S. government, the World Bank, and private investors here and in the States, the businessmen have helped make shrimp the number three export earner for Honduras, behind only bananas and coffee.
Los camarones ahí están, y la tierra aquí está también. Y este es el ecosistema ideal para que...
The shrimp are there, and the land is here, and this is the ideal ecosystem. And we have people who want to work and get ahead, so why not do it? Why not take advantage of this ideal resource that we have?
¿Por qué no vamos a hacer un aprovechamiento ideal de todo el recurso que tenemos?
The shrimp industry provides jobs in one of the poorest regions of the country. And last year, Lara tells us, shrimp sales brought in more than $30 million in foreign exchange. The shrimp farms are an example of what policymakers see as the future of Latin America in the new global economy, and a hope for many countries to emerge from poverty and a crushing burden of debt.
The Honduras case really highlights the new strategy of the 1990s that is based on not so much aid, but more on trade and promoting trade and exports, promoting private investment.
John Sombrilo is one of the leading advocates of the U.S. government's export policy in Latin America. As director of the AID, or Agency for International Development Programs, in Honduras and El Salvador, Sombrilo has been encouraging private investment in new export industries. A key element of this strategy has been the Caribbean Basin Initiative, which offers some Latin American countries better access to U.S. markets. Now, under a broader U.S. plan, the proposed Enterprise for the Americas Initiative, the entire hemisphere would be united in a single trading bloc. And Sombrailo warns that countries that don't go along with this free trade, export-driven model will be left behind.
What you see happening in Latin America is as historically significant as the fall of the Berlin Wall. The changes going on in Eastern Europe. You have a new model out there. We in the United States Foreign Aid Program are attempting to implement that in Honduras and in other countries, help these countries make the transition to more market-based economies. What we see is a more buoyant world economy that's good for everybody.
At the heart of this model is the notion that each country has something that gives it a competitive edge in the global market. And so in Honduras, U.S. loans have supported farmers who export melons for the U.S. winter market. AID has helped finance the creation of assembly plants, which take advantage of cheap labor to make things like Aero shirts. And AID has loaned some $11 million to build the shrimp ponds along the Gulf, where a rich marine breeding ground provides another kind of competitive edge. Honduran economist Ramon Velasquez says this new foreign model won't help the country any more than the previous models, which left Honduras deep in debt and dependent on U.S. aid.
Now they come with another fashionable economic model, which they want us to follow like little bunny rabbits. AID is present in everything, but they have never put on our shoes and asked about what we think. They come like conquistadores, giving orders. They sit in their air-conditioned offices, look over the statistics they get from the central bank, and they begin to make decisions without knowing the people.
The people perhaps most affected are the thousands of fishermen of the Gulf of Fonseca. Mauricio Alvarado and the other men in this small wooden boat live and work among the cool, shady estuaries of the Gulf. As their boat puts down the narrow waterway, blue crabs scuttle along the muddy bank. White egrets wade in the shallow water. These men grew up here, fishing and netting shrimp from the estuaries and lagoons in order to feed their families. But now, Mauricio says, in some places they've been shut out by the shrimp farms.
Estamos en terreno que nosotros pescadores lo consideramos que es un terreno nacional.
We are in land that we fishermen consider to be national territory. But the government gave a concession to a businessman to build a shrimp farm here. When it is built, there will be a canal, and it would block the stream, and no fishermen will be able to come up here.
Recently, another shrimp farmer built a fence across a lagoon used by local fishermen for generations. One night, local families cut through the fence and burned down a building. Tensions like these are part of the reason Mauricio and other fishermen formed an environmental group to protect the Gulf resources. Mauricio guides us down the estuary, past thick stands of mangrove trees. Then off to the right, he points to a sea of stumps, 50 acres of downed trees, cut back by a shrimp farmer who's preparing a pond.
Cualquier persona que tenga buenos sentimientos, buen corazón.
Any good Honduran's heart would break at the sight of this destruction.
Se le partiría el corazón al ver estas destrucciones así.
These mangroves are home to an immense diversity of plant and marine life. The fishermen say if they're destroyed, the marine life they depend on will disappear. But their greater fear is of the army of boats sent out to net larvae for the shrimp farms. Fishermen say these larvae catchers have drastically reduced the amount of shrimp and fish available in the estuaries. Shrimp farmers blame overfishing, caused by a flood of migrants who've come down to the Gulf from the drought-ravaged hills. But the fishermen say their problems began when the shrimp industry arrived.
I raised my sons here, but now we're going to have to find somewhere else to live. There's no way to make a living here. This water used to be full of fish. Now you fish the whole day and come home with only a pound, a half a pound of fish.
We have been trying to analyze this problem. We're very concerned that we may be promoting an industry that is having a major environmental impact, adverse environmental impact.
Del McCloskey, expert in shrimp development, sits at his desk at the U.S. AID office in the capital of Tegucigalpa. McCloskey acknowledges the fishermen's claims, yet he says there's not enough information to make even a good guess as to what the impact of the shrimp industry is.
There is potential for major damage. We have, at this time, no idea what sort of impact we're having on those populations.
5 years ago, AID contracted a study to help get the country's shrimp industry on its feet in the world export market. The numbers look good on paper, but no one at AID imagined its broader effects. And now, the agency is playing catch-up.
One problem we face is that there is no master plan. You would think that there would be, but there isn't. So what we've been trying to do is to head off some of the potential social and environmental confrontations that could come from this industry's development.
Despite these problems, Honduras, one of the poorest countries in Latin America, is desperate to generate employment. The shrimp industry has created several thousand jobs along the southern coast. Here at the packing plant for Granjas Marinas, women in white smocks and rubber boots stand in long lines at stainless steel tables, quickly cutting the shrimp into the butterfly shapes preferred at fancy U.S. restaurants.
All the shrimp in the United States, everything.
Plant manager Werner Bulk says these are well-treated, well-paid workers. They work in a clean, modern factory with a subsidized general store and a social club. Bulk and his assistant say the workers receive the equivalent in Honduran lempiras of up to $5 a day in a country where the minimum per day is $1.75.
About 20 lems, 25 lems a day, something like this one.
They make good money. I guess they are making good money.
In the depressed little port town of San Lorenzo, where most of the workers live, there are few signs of prosperity. And here we heard complaints about poor treatment of workers inside the plant. One Saturday afternoon, we met with four women who agreed to discuss their treatment, but only if we didn't use their names. They told us that the wage was not $5 a day, but less than half that. And even that amount is at risk if they don't keep their productivity high.
They intimidate us. If we don't process all the shrimp they put at our workstation within an hour, they'll punish us. We'll lose 2 whole days' pay.
Por ejemplo, perdemos un día, los quitan el séptimo, o sea que perdemos 2 días.
No, uno se siente humillada porque por lo menos no hay trabajo, ¿verdad?
We feel humiliated, but there is no other work. I have children, and if I don't work, they can't go to school. So I have to do whatever they say.
The women complained of backaches from standing all day, sometimes for 12 hours, of stinging, peeling hands from the chlorine water used to disinfect the shrimp. But they said they wouldn't think of bringing these complaints to the manager, Werner Bulk.
No one talks about those things because there are spies around. If you try to organize the workers, they'll throw the whole little group to the winds. I tried to form a union in 1984, right here in the shrimp factory. We thought we had the confidence of everyone involved. But they put snitches on us to find out who we were. And it got back to Werner. He fired us all.
When this woman came back looking for work several years later, she says the management didn't recognize her. If the women's allegations about union busting are true, it would put Honduras in violation of the Caribbean Basin Initiative, which guarantees workers the right to form unions. We returned to the plant to ask manager Werner Bulk about the charges and to clarify how much the workers were paid. But as we learned later, Bulk had been informed of our contacts with some of his workers. This time, he wouldn't tell us what the workers were paid.
No, I don't know.
You don't know what people make here?
Then, as we asked him about the allegations of union busting, he became angry.
A number of workers have told us that they've... Wait a minute.
Then he grabbed one of our two microphones and broke it over his knee.
Out of my way, fucker.
Later, Carlos Lara, director of Granjas Marinas, said he was unaware of any attempts to prevent workers from forming a union. Back at the AID offices in Tegucigalpa, John Sombrilo, one of the chief spokesmen for the new export policy in Central America, admits there are some trade-offs. He acknowledges potential social and environmental costs and says with any change of this scale, there's bound to be some upheaval. But it's worth it, he says, for the long-term benefits that will generate income and jobs.
We're at the early stages of a historic revolution. We are the modern-day Adam Smiths, looking at market mechanisms, more decentralized economies, more democratic economies. And in this transition, there are going to be abuses. There's no question about it. Much like the transformation that took place in the European economies during the Industrial Revolution of the 19th century, there were abuses, and there will continue to be abuses. But if you compare those abuses to the stagnation and the abuses that existed under the previous model, I do not see how you can argue that the previous model was that much better.
The thing is that schemes like this, you know, if we are not careful, it will only benefit a few people in my country and other countries, and the large population will be left with the effects.
Honduran ecologist Jorge Betancourt helped begin the country's struggling environmental movement. He is also associate director of the Peace Corps in Honduras.
I have seen in the past that a lot of these new projects just tend to put more pressure on the resource base of the country, the natural resources. It is very important that any development scheme has an environmental and social component. It has to be mandatory.
But in the new global push for free trade, critics say, protections for labor, the environment, and local populations are being swept aside. The whole idea, says Steve Hellinger, director of the Development Group for Alternative Policies in Washington, is to give maximum freedom to private enterprise.
Those people see the absence of controls as a central element in the model, and they would not promote an integration if, in fact, there were sufficient controls in these areas to satisfy labor and environmental and other constituencies.
Hellinger argues the export model has taken jobs from the U.S. while creating few real benefits in the exporting countries. The result, he says, is a widening gap between rich and poor.
If you go to any place from Mexico to Poland now, where this private sector, free market, deregulated model is being implemented, you see tremendous poverty, not just among the already poor, but among the working class and middle class people generally. And 5% of the population, which is doing great, and shops full of upscale consumer goods, but I don't think it can be sustained. We're already beginning to see the limits of growth. Resources have been extracted so rapidly over the past decade that you're seeing all kinds of environmental crises developing. It just can't continue.
At the moment, however, free trade dominates the world's economic agenda, and most Latin American governments agree with U.S. policymakers that this is their best chance to follow the path of countries like Korea and Taiwan and join the ranks of the prosperous industrial world. With Nancy Pastero, this is Sandy Tolan reporting.